For decades, the patriots of Eastern Europe fought against communism. Despite the threat of imprisonment and near total censorship, they continued to speak out. They called themselves dissidents. Ultimately, they prevailed against tremendous odds. Now, at long last, American patriots are speaking out against the forces that are destroying this country. This program is the voice of those patriots. This is American Dissident Voices. Your host is Kevin Alfred Strong.
The history of America and of Western civilization is not being taught as it should be in our schools and universities today. Historical facts are suppressed, and what is taught is distorted in such a way as to advance the world government agenda. With all inconvenient historical facts, knowledge of which might cause our young people to question that agenda, purposely left out. It is a tragedy of monumental proportions that our schools have been converted into liberal brainwashing institutions, though I do feel a sense of encouragement when I read that more and more real Americans are taking their children out of the public schools and teaching them at home. As regular listeners to this program know, the global elite that push multiculturalism push it because it undermines our national and racial sense of identity, and not out of any love or concern for ethnic minorities. In fact, it should be obvious to everyone that multiculturalism and globalism threaten the racial and cultural integrity of all peoples, not just white Americans. Nevertheless, because America is, or was until recently, an overwhelmingly white nation, one of the primary ways that national disintegration is promoted is by the inculcation of white guilt for black slavery. By recounting and emphasizing again and again the real and imagined sufferings of black people under slavery, the white student is made to feel that his ancestors were cruel, morally retarded, and evil. They are made to feel that they owe black people a nearly infinite compensation, since they are taught black people's problems today are the legacy of hundreds of years of slavery for which white people, all white people, are responsible. They are taught that the relative prosperity which we today was achieved largely by the exploitation of black slaves. Is it any wonder that thousands of our young people join Jesse Jackson in chanting, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western culture's gotta go"? Is it any wonder that they all too often reject our European cultural heritage and embrace all forms of alien styles of music, dancing, dress, grooming, and slang, from Jamaican Rasta to gangsta rap? Is it any wonder that white teenagers are committing suicide in higher numbers every year? They have received in our public schools and colleges not a liberal education, but an education by liberals. They have been taught very well indeed, taught that they and their ancestors and their traditions and their natural feelings are worthless and an obstacle to be overcome. Now, these liberal lies are easily countered by facts. The primary fact that must be emphasized is that many hundreds of thousands of white people were slaves in early America. In fact, white slavery was not only extremely common, but until the late 18th century, it was far more common than black slavery here. Also little known is the fact that living and labor conditions for black slaves, bad as they often were usually far better than those for white slaves. At this point, many of you are probably saying, "White slaves? What in the world is he talking about? Sure, there were white indentured servants and apprentices in colonial America, and maybe sometimes they were treated badly. But actual white slavery, that's something that disappeared with the Romans and the Vikings. And to compare white indentured servants to black slaves is the worst sort of racist distortion of history." Some of you are probably saying or thinking exactly that. And quite frankly, to most of us, the idea of white slavery in early America is hard to accept, schooled as we are by the controlled media and the liberal-dominated public schools. But researcher and writer Michael Hoffman has recently come out with one of the most earth-shaking works of historical research in the last decade, entitled "They Were White and They Were Slaves." This program is based on original research into documents long hidden from the public eye and revealing a very different America from that presented in the controlled media.
You are tuned to American Dissident Voices, an island of free speech in a sea of controlled and managed news. For a catalog of books, tapes, and videos that the censors of political correctness don't want you to see, just send $1 to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
There is a history of white people that has never been told in any coherent form, largely because most modern historians have, for reasons of politics or psychology, refused to recognize white slaves in America as just that. Today, not a tear is shed for the sufferings of millions of our enslaved forefathers. 200 years of white slavery in America have been almost completely obliterated from the collective memory of the American people. Writer Elaine Kendall asks, quote, "Who wants to be reminded that half, perhaps as many as two-thirds, of the original American colonists came here not of their own free will, but kidnapped, shanghaied, impressed, duped, beguiled, and yes, in chains? We tend to gloss over it. We'd prefer to forget the whole sorry chapter." Close quote. A correct understanding of the authentic history of the enslavement of whites in America could have profound consequences for the future. Most of the books on labor in early America use words like white indentured servitude, white bond servants, white servants, etc. Few are now aware that the majority of these so-called servants were bound to a condition more properly called permanent chattel slavery unto death. The papers legally allowing the enslavement, called indentures, were often forged by kidnappers and press gangs, and in cases where these papers did not literally specify a life term of servitude, the slave owner had the legal right to unilaterally increase the length of the term on the flimsiest pretexts. The so-called apprentices or indentured servants had no say in the matter. These enslaved white people are, however, never called slaves by the establishment academics and media spokesmen. To do so would destroy the myth of unique black victimhood and universal white guilt. Today, with the massive concentration of educational and media resources on the black experience of slavery, the unspoken assumption has been that only blacks have been enslaved to any degree or magnitude worthy of study or memorial. The historical record reveals that this is not the case, however. The word slave itself is derived from the word Slav, a reference to the Eastern European white people who, among others, were enslaved by their fellow whites, by the Mongols, and by the Arabs over a period of many centuries. According to Thomas Burton's Parliamentary Diary, 1656 to 1659, in 1659 the English Parliament debated the practice of selling British whites into slavery in the New World. In the debate, these whites were referred to not as indentured servants, but as, quote, slaves, unquote. In the Calendar of State Papers Colonial Series, America and the West Indies, of 1701, we read of a protest over the, quote, encouragement to the spiriting away of Englishmen without their consent and selling them for slaves, which hath been a practice very frequent and known by the name of kidnapping, close quote. In the British West Indies, plantation slavery was instituted as early as 1627. In Barbados, by the 1640s, there were an estimated 25,000 slaves, of whom 21,700 were white. This document records that while white slaves were worked to death, as they cost next to nothing, there were Caribbean Indians brought from Guyana to help propagate native foodstuffs who were well treated and received as free persons by the wealthy planters. The Englishman William Edis, after observing white slaves in America in the 1770s, wrote, quote, generally speaking, they groan beneath a worse than Egyptian bondage, close quote. Governor Sharp of the Maryland colony compared the property interest of the planters in their white slaves with the estate of an English farmer consisting of a, quote, multitude of cattle, close quote. Lay historian Colonel A.B. Ellis, writing in the British newspaper Argosy for May 6, 1893, said, quote, few but readers of old colonial state papers and records are aware that between the years 1649 to 1690, a lively trade was carried on between England and the plantations, as the colonies were then called, a trade in political prisoners. They were sold at auction for various terms of years, sometimes for life, as slaves, close quote. Sir George Sandys' 1618 plan for Virginia referred to bound whites assigned to the treasurer's office to, quote, belong to said office forever, close quote. The service of whites bound to Berkeley's hundred was deemed, quote, perpetual, close quote. Numerous documents from the 17th, 18th, and even 19th centuries revealed that these whites in bondage certainly referred to themselves as slaves, and there are even records of blacks referring to them as, quote, white slaves, unquote. Did you know that the expression kidnapping, originally kidnabbing, had its origin in the abduction of poor white children into factory slavery in Britain or plantation slavery in America? Did you know that the expression spirited away likewise originated with the white slavers, who were also called spirits. The white slavery in America was but an extension of the white slavery in the mother country, Britain, where the legal form of contracted indentured servitude and apprenticeship was maintained as a spurious cover for plain and simple lifetime chattel slavery. Particularly shocking was the enslavement of white children for factory labor. Children were openly seized from orphanages and workhouses and placed in the factories. In Brian Inglis's Poverty and the Industrial Revolution, we read, quote, "Here then was a ready source of labor, and a very welcome one. The children were formally indentured as apprentices. What happened to them was nobody's concern. A parish in London, having got rid of a batch of unwanted pauper children, was unlikely to interest itself in their subsequent fate. The term apprenticeship was in any case a misnomer." Close quote. In Marjorie Cruikshank's Children and Industry, quote, "Many employers imported child apprentices, parish orphans from workhouses far and near. Clearly, overseers of the poor were only too keen to get rid of the orphans. Children were brought to the factories like cartloads of live lumber and abandoned to their fate. Poor children, taken from workhouses or kidnapped in the streets of the metropolis, used to be brought down by coach to Manchester and slid into a cellar in Mosley Street as if they had been stones or any other inanimate substance." Close quote. They worked up to 16 hours a day, and during that period the doors were locked. Children, and most of the mill workers were children, were allowed out only to go to the necessary. In some factories, it was forbidden to open the windows. The child apprentices who were on night shift might have to stay on it for as long as 4 or 5 years. They were lucky if they were given a half penny an hour. This was labor without any breaks. Unceasing labor. When the children fell asleep at the machines, they were lashed into wakefulness with a whip. If they arrived late to the factory, talked to another child, or committed some other infraction, they were beaten with an iron bar known as a billy roller, 8 feet long and 1.5 inches in diameter. Many were thus murdered, often for trifling offenses, such as calling out names to the next child. Thousands of children were mangled or mutilated by the primitive factory machinery every year. They were often disfigured or disabled for life, then abandoned, receiving no compensation of any kind. Similar conditions obtained for enslaved white children on this side of the Atlantic, as what William Blake called "these satanic mills" spread to our shores. Historian Oscar Handlin writes that in colonial America, white servants could be bartered for a profit, sold to the highest bidder for the unpaid debts of their masters, and otherwise transferred like movable goods or chattels. The controlled media focus exclusively on the enslavement of blacks. The impression is given that only whites bear responsibility for enslaving blacks, and that only blacks were slaves. In fact, blacks in Africa engaged in extensive enslavement of their own kind. Slavery was endemic in Africa, with entire tribes being enslaved through conquest on a regular basis. When Arabic, Jewish, and white slave traders arrived on the coast of sub-Saharan Africa, they seldom, if ever, had to travel inland and fight or pursue their quarry. They were met on the coast by Africans, more than willing to sell slaves to them by the thousands. And in America, records show that black slaves were owned not just by a few wealthy whites, but by free blacks and by Cherokee Indians. In some cases, these blacks and Indians even owned white slaves. White slaves were actually owned by blacks and Indians in the South to such an extent that the Virginia Assembly passed the following law in 1670. Quote, "It is enacted that no Negro or Indian, though bought their own freedom, shall be capable of any such purchase of Christians." Close quote. The records of the time reveal that free blacks often owned black slaves themselves. In 1717, it was proposed that a qualification for election to the South Carolina Assembly was to be, quote, "the ownership of one white man," close quote. From 1609 until the early 1800s, between one-half and two-thirds of all the white colonists who came to the New World came as slaves. White slaves cleared the forests, drained the swamps, built the roads, sweated in the fields, and died like flies in hellish factories. Owned like property, they had no rights nor recourse to the law. Fugitive slave laws applied to them just as to blacks if they should flee their masters. Black slaves were expensive, and though at times cruelly used, were not often used beyond the limits of human endurance. That would have been a waste of a costly investment. White slaves, however, consisting of the poor and unwanted surplus population of Britain, were available for nearly nothing. Just a few pence for a thug to billy-club them and shanghai them aboard a westward-bound vessel. Thus, they were expendable. Both psychologically and materially, whites in modern times are called upon to bear burdens of guilt and monetary reparation for black slavery. This position is based entirely on enforced ignorance and the deliberate suppression of the record of white slavery in North America. Reparations, welfare, and affirmative action as compensation for past slavery? Leaving aside for the moment the very questionable idea of punishing the great-grandson for the sins of the great-grandfather, let us consider the principles involved. Far more whites in America are descendants of white slaves than are descendants of slave owners. And considering the endemic nature of slavery in black Africa, it is quite likely that a large proportion of blacks in America have ancestors who were themselves slave owners. So let us hear no more of white guilt and endless payments and affirmative action to atone for the sin of the enslavement of blacks. These endless payments themselves are a form of slavery. For the good of all races and peoples, let us rid ourselves of slavery for all time. We've talked quite a bit about one kind of white slavery on this program, the white slavery that existed in early America. But there is another kind of white slavery, a modern kind of white slavery. It is the enslavement of our young people's minds. If we can get these facts to our young people, we can easily demolish the huge edifice of lies that now chains the minds of an entire generation of young Americans. Though the enemies of America own and control the major media, though they occupy the controlling positions in our education bureaucracy, they and their lies are still very vulnerable. They are vulnerable because the truth is a very powerful weapon. Our young people may be degraded and disoriented by the miseducation they have received, but they have an inalienable genetic ability to think rationally, and the good instincts and common sense which nature placed within the generation of Valley Forge and Concord, lies dormant within this generation also. Most of the facts brought forward on this program were taken from the shocking and powerful book by researcher Michael Hoffman, entitled They Were White and They Were Slaves. They Were White and They Were Slaves gives us the historical facts that the politically correct education establishment purposely suppresses. Its bibliography alone contains over 240 citations and references to primary historical documents. Its original research is unassailable. It is a much-needed and groundbreaking book, a book which has the potential to change American history for the better if we can get it into the right hands, the hands of our youngsters. They Were White and They Were Slaves is available as our radio offer, number 25, to any listener who contributes $10 or more this week to keep this truth-telling program on the air. Just send $10 or more today to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. And remember to ask for radio offer number 25.
You have been listening to American Dissident Voices,
a beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the voluntary support of its listeners to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 for a book and tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute two international reply coupons for the $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high-fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.